Rockies 102.9, The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian On Demand is brought to you by Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew exhilarates and quenches with its one-of-a-kind great taste. Mountain Dew, this is how we do.
Now we turn the show over to our music expert, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Good.
Let's start with the dumbest news story you have on your list this morning. WWE's Kevin Owens challenges Elton John to a wrestling match.
That I'd pay to see.
Yeah, you may have read a little bit. Elton John had to cancel a couple shows in Florida this weekend because of an ear infection. So this apparently run afoul of Mr. Owens, the WWE wrestler, who went on social media to tweet that nobody ruins my wife and my date night except me. And so he's annoyed at Elton. So as retribution, he wants Elton in the ring.
Elton won't even give him the time of day. I mean, he doesn't. He's Elton John. Sir Elton John.
He wants to wrestle him because he canceled the show.
I'd be a little surprised if he responds in any way. But, you know, yeah. Well, and he won't. You know, he might respond, but, yeah, he's certainly not going to be doing any wrestling. The only thing he's going to be pounding is his piano.
Oh, man, I'm glad you said piano.
So maybe he'll just do a personal show for Kevin Owens and his wife.
He could offer something like that because, they did postpone the show, so he'll be back. I mean, it's a three-year freaking farewell tour, so, you know, it's not like he doesn't have time to come do the shows again.
Hey, someone's getting fired, right? Taylor Swift jumped record labels. How did that happen?
Actually, I'm going to ask you to repeat that. I'm getting a bizarre echo.
Really?
Listening to you guys. I mean, I'm getting you twice, which I like, you know, because twice as much is always great. but some of the voices are overlapping, so I didn't hear what you were asking about.
All right. Does that help?
I still got it.
Still got it. All right. I keep working on it. Taylor Swift is jumping record labels. What's up with that?
Taylor is, a lot of stuff is going on with Taylor. First of all, she's on the Forbes list for the, you know, of the, she is not the richest woman in music, but she's number two. She has just 80 million, whereas Katy Perry has 83 million, but go figure. But a lot of other stuff going on in Taylor Swift world. She's left her longtime record company, Big Machine Records. That deal expired, and she signed with Republic Records and the Universal Music Group. Now, on one hand, this may seem earth-shaking. On the other hand, they're all part of the Universal Music Group, conglomerate. So Scott Borchetta, who was the guy who brought Taylor Swift to Big Machine Records, I'm sure has plenty of stake in the broader Universal Music Group. So he'll do just fine with her. The move makes sense. You know, Big Machine is more of a country kind of label, which is, of course, where Taylor Swift started, but now she's become much more of a pop artist, and so Republic Records is a good home for her. Taylor Swift, by the way, was also voted Ticketmaster's Artist of the Year by fans. She's been on tour this year, and she's, has been seen by a lot of people, sold a lot of tickets, and so it kind of makes sense that she's the Artist of the Year there.
I feel like I've seen Taylor Swift everywhere couple of years ago, but not Katy Perry everywhere ever.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Really?
I think Taylor's more visible, you know, but Katy does a lot, and she finds a way to be seen and to be visible. I just think Taylor's audience is larger and a little more universal. You see more dudes at a Taylor Swift show than you do at a Katy Perry show. So I just think there's a larger and more universal crowd there.
Well, let's get on to the really important stuff. New Year's Rock and Eve will be here before we know it, Gary.
It will be. You know, the year's moving fast on us, and so the Eve, you know, which is a big the big ABC show. It was Dick Clark's show for a long time, and now it's been been taken over by a number of people, and it'll happen again, just like New Year's Eve happens. It'll happen again on the 31st, and we're just starting to find out who some of the acts are going to be. And it's going to lean pop. Foster the People, the Chainsmokers are going to be part of it. Kelsey Ballerini, Dua Lipa, Macklemore, Skylar Grey, Charlie Puth. Not a whole lot of, you know, classic rock in there yet. They usually add a token sometime closer to the event. Ryan Seacrest will be the big host again. Jenny McCarthy will be there in Times Square.
Boy, that
this is just the initial announcement. They're also apparently they're going to be adding a New Orleans segment to the show as well. So you'll have New York, New Orleans, and Los Angeles going in addition, you know, all at once. And it started, I remember last year, it started at like 8 or 9 in the evening, and then, you know, they break for the news, and then they pick up again at 11:30 and go until 3 or 4 in the morning.
Jenny McCarthy, that's her only job now, right?
Pretty much.
Just doing
I
New
can't
Year's
think of
Eve.
Anything else we see her. I don't think she has a talk show or anything right
no.
now.
No, she was on The View for a little while, and then she didn't pan out there, and then she married Donnie Wahlberg, so the bills are being paid. So, you know, see her once a year, we're fine. And she's usually she's usually loaded on New Year's Eve, too, when she's doing the show.
Exactly.
Woodstock's 50 years old. What's the news out of there?
Well, it looks like it'll be 50 years old, you know, next August, and a lot of stuff is happening there, too. The U.S. Postal Service plans to put out a 50th anniversary commemorative stamp or stamp series. That'll happen next year. But the bigger news is that it looks like there is going to be an actual concert, festival, whatever. I know I spoke with Arlo Guthrie recently, and he told me he's been asked to hold the date. Other reportage out there says that Pearl Jam, Foo Fighters.
Did they also ask him not to die in between now and then, too?
Oh, they will. They'll ask. Okay. I'm sure Carlos Santana was asked to hold the date on things like that. Apparently, according to other reportage out there, they've asked Pearl Jam, the Foo Fighters, Coldplay are among the acts that have reportedly been asked. Eminem, Ariana Grande, Mumford & Sons, The Weeknd, Bon Jovi, Elton John. I think it's a lot of pie in the sky right now until they actually hone in on what they want to do. And this will be the first time there's been a Woodstock gathering since 1999. So that'll be, you know, what, 20 years. And did not end well. It was a pretty good weekend, but did not end well, of course, with a bit of a riot at the end of the 1999. So, but you know, since then, the festival culture in the U.S. has changed so much. We're used to these big weekend destination festivals like Bonnaroo and Coachella and Lollapalooza. So Woodstock won't be just an excuse for people to go wild and recreate what they think should be the Woodstock spirit. You know, the Woodstock spirit exists dozens of times a summer now. So I think this will be a much more straightforward type of festival.
And the greatest album of all time is?
Is, well, according to this particular poll, because there's always these polls, but it's Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd. That's a poll conducted by Louder Sound, which is a big British conglomerate. They publish a number of magazines, including Classic Rock and Prog Rock and Q Magazine. Yeah, a bunch of really well-known ones. That's a poll that, like I say, named Pink Floyd. Dark Side of the Moon 1, Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction 2, AC/DC Back in Black 3, Metallica's Master of Puppets 4, Led Zeppelin 4 is ranked 5, The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper came in at 7. Led Zeppelin actually had 2 in the top 10 because Physical Graffiti was number 10.
What is your top album of all time if you had to pick?
I run away from that question. No, I really do. I run away from that all the time.
How do you answer that?
It changes. No, it's a hard one to answer, and it changes. I mean, Dark Side's a good choice. You know, how do you not say Sgt. Pepper even if it's not even your favorite Beatles album? But, you know, if you think about what the best album of all time really should be, the most impactful and influential album of all time, and in that case, you know, Sgt. Pepper's really was. That changed the scope of and the landscape of music in a way we still feel today, even though you could then say, well, yeah, but the Beach Boys put out Pet Sounds first, and maybe that's the one that set everything in motion.
Well, you could pick a different category every day to pick your top, you know.
Sure.
Impact. Exactly. And I'm happy to equivocate.
Okay, let's not make it the most impactful. Let's just say your favorite album, the album that you can still put on right now, drop the needle, and listen to every song and go, I still like that album.
Oh, boy, I don't have one, believe it or not. I have several. You know, I have several that are go-to albums.
Go ahead.
One that surprises a lot of people was the first Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul album, Men Without Women. Just something about that album that puts together everything I love in music, because it rocks hard, but it's also got a real R&B bass to it, and you know, horns and a real groove, and that's one that's when I do get to play music for my own taste. That's one that always gets in there. But then you've got stuff like, you know, there's a couple of the Genesis albums that factor up there. The Beatles' Rubber Soul, even more than Sgt. Pepper's for me, or Abbey Road, is one that gets in there. The Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street. And, you know, I know when I start listing them, I realize how many. I'm forgetting as many as I'm naming.
What about the White Album? That was reissued.
That's put the Beatles back in the top 10, number 6 on the Billboard 200 with that reissue. That has the ability to rank that high because there are a couple different versions of it, the three disc set, and then of course the big 6 CD set. Not my favorite, you know, either album or Beatles album. I think there's a lot of good stuff on it, but like a lot of people, I don't think it's all that cohesive of an album listening experience. I'm listening more for the individual songs than to go front to back.
This is one of the more ridiculous stories that you have on your list. Larry the Cable Guy is opening for Styx. How'd they pull that off? Or does he just need work? Or what's the deal there?
Apparently Larry the Cable Guy and Styx are fans of each other. And so he has used their music in his shows, both broadcast and stand-up. So they're getting together for a tour early in 2009. It's called the Laugh Rock Seriously Tour, February 8th at the Panther Arena in Milwaukee. University of Wisconsin.
Yep, UW-Milwaukee. Panther Arena. Yep.
So they'll be playing the show there, and it's going to be, you know, I think they haven't talked about exactly how they're going to do it yet. I would imagine, you know, though Larry the Cable Guy is arguably the bigger of the two acts, he'll go on first, and then Styx will come out and rock, and then maybe Larry will come on for Mr. Roboto or something. I don't know.
All right.
Have we been pronouncing Blink 182 wrong?
Apparently. Somebody got into it. I think this was the British press got into it about, okay, so how do you really pronounce it? And there were a lot of different guesses and explanations and things like that. So Tom DeLonge, who's the former guitar player and the kind of weirdo who who writes all about UFOs and, you know, has been visited by aliens and things like that, says that it is actually supposed to be pronounced Blink 182. Some people were saying it's supposed to be Blink 182.
What is that
or
Blink name?
182. So he's saying Blink 182.
What's the meaning behind that?
That name, I actually don't know. That's one you can get several explanations for, because that's what those guys are like. You know, as you can tell from the songs, they're a little bit irreverent. So I've heard several different explanations about it. Some not broadcast worthy. Others just, you know, strange metaphysical explanations. They're funny guys, and so they're not going to give you a straight answer on that.
It's too much work to say 182. People just shorten it to Blink.
It's still Blink 182 to me.
Yeah. All right, what's our last story today, Gary? You pick.
Our last story today. I get to say, I always hate when you guys do this.
I'll pick it.
There's so many good things that happen. But I guess, you know, I know you were thinking about what kind of Hanukkah present you want to get for me.
All right.
What I'm getting you. It's a dreidel. That's it. Done. It's already wrapped.
If it's shaped like the recording console that Led Zeppelin recorded Stairway to Heaven on, I'd be happy.
Okay. How much you picked that up for?
How many millions is that going to get? I don't know. It's going up for auction later this month via Bonhams, and it's from the Basing Street Studio Number 2 in England. It was part of Island Records, London Studios. Not only Stairway was recorded there, but Bob Marley and the Wailers recorded I Shot the Sheriff. Cat Stevens recorded Peace Train, and some of the Rolling Stones' Angie was recorded there. Just a, you know, really legendary studio console. So, yeah, if that's going to be my Hanukkah present, I'll wait till after the 8th day
to
get it.
Those songs make it legendary. I want to know the songs that sucked that were recorded on that. You know?
Yeah.
like Seasons in the Sun, Terry Jack or something like that was recorded on this thing. Or the DeFranco family, Heartbeat, It's a Love Beat.
Nothing quite like that.
All right. Well, Gary, thanks for the time this morning.
All right, and we will talk next week.
All right, Gary Graff, our music expert. Get him on Friday mornings here.